Saturday afternoon edition of the Anaheim Calling Podcast. We're back to discuss the week that was in Ducks hockey. Pretty crazy week. We had the first delayed game or postponed game, I think, of the NHL season for some very unfortunate circumstances that we'll get into. Ducks also, I think that, so we'll talk about the tail end of their road trip last Sunday and how that game had some pockets, we'll call it pockets of goodness. And then we'll also discuss their game this past Thursday against the Calgary Flames, which was not so good. The Ducks lost that one 6-0.
There was one good thing about it.
Troy Terry had a very good
very,
game.
Very good.
I'm just gonna beat you to that punch. But yes, yeah, so we're gonna talk about those games. However, we got kind of lucky here as podcasting professionals. So
really lucky? You're gonna put it as lucky.
Well, okay, so see, I don't have any emotional attachment to this. I just have the attachment of, hey, I want content. I want things to talk about for the show. So, actually, Jake, why don't you tell us what happened? Why don't I twist the knife a little further here?
This was about, what, maybe 5 minutes before we went live?
Okay, well, I'll just jump into it. So, Nicolas Deslauriers signed to a 2-year extension for Anaheim. $1 million AAV, $1 million in actual cash per year. So, a $2 million total contract. Nick Deslauriers doubling down on Nicky D, the Flying Fists. How about it? How about it?
So
I just love this because it's gonna melt down everyone, all the analytics people / Ducks fans on Twitter.
Yeah,
I think some Ducks fans are probably happy about this, though.
There's definitely gonna be a contingent of Ducks fans that.
I mean, to be fair, so I'll give the kind of 30,000 feet view before you have your little meltdown.
Yeah.
So
there is one coming. Don't worry, people.
Yeah, we just got to tee him up properly, and I think that me somewhat arguing the merits is going to get him even more riled up. So let's just give me a second here.
Thanks.
So this contract is about as minimal in terms of financial impact as possible. It's $1 million AAV. It accounts for a tiny percentage of the actual cap. And Nick Deslauriers has been a staple on this fourth line. He's been a guy that, for whatever reason, Dallas Eakins has really gone to consistently. He seems to be a really popular player around the room, a good veteran to have around the kids. So, by the way, his cap hit percentage, so the percentage of the cap that his actual AAV takes up is 1.23%. So, not a lot. So, you know, if you pay that small fee to have a guy who is going to stabilize that emotional quotient of the team, give you a boost when you need it. I don't know. I don't really have this kind of animosity towards this signing because I just don't see it as super impactful, both on the ice and in terms of the Ducks' financial situation. But Jake, why don't you tell us your thoughts on it?
Let's go with this. So the only benefit that I have to this deal, the only thing that I can really think of that would make this deal make any sense in my mind, and I really don't even like this description of it because I don't even think that it makes a whole lot of sense to do this with him when you have other guys that can fill that quota. But for the upcoming expansion draft, I believe you have to have, the rules are, 2 forwards that have played in 50 games in the prior season or 80 games in the prior two. Give me a second to confirm that. I believe that those are the 40-70. So 40 games in the prior season, 70 games in the prior two seasons. And I believe that you have to have 2 of them exposed. And they have to be under contract for the season after the expansion draft. So essentially this 2-year deal would put Nick Deslauriers under contract for the year after, so he would then meet that quota. He is really the only kind of fourth liner that I guess would kind of meet that that quota. So maybe that's it. But I mean, here's the meltdown. It's coming, people. Why would you sign him to a 2-year extension? I don't care that the money's cheap. Yes, it doesn't affect the cap. But the issue that we have, and this is the very frustrating thing about this entire thing, is that we had a whole discussion about Corey Perry over summer, about the reason that they bought him out, that the buyout wasn't a money situation, that the buyout wasn't about his necessary play on the ice, because his play was not worth what he was making necessarily, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't negatively impacting the team. And there's no way you can make the argument that $8 million with a player that in some ways positively affects the team is worse than $6 million against the cap next season for nothing. Absolutely nothing. And so we had this entire discussion last summer about, well, the only logical thing you could say about buying out Perry is that it opens up roster spots. It opens up spots for the kids to come in. It gives them space because that's what's needed. You need to see what you have in the Daniel Sprongs of the world, in the Troy Terrys of the world, in the Max Joneses, in the Max Comtois, in the Braden Tracy eventually, in all of these guys, in Kiefer Sherwood. You need to know what you have at some point in Kiefer Sherwood, right? At some point in time, you need to know. Well, this deal stops some of that. Because you know what? Kiefer Sherwood's a perfectly great fourth liner probably right now, right? Would you agree? Felix is just laughing at me right now.
I'm actually legitimately laughing right now.
But right.
So just keep going.
Kiefer Sherwood would be a perfectly good fourth liner, right?
Yes. Yes, to answer your question.
So
I'm not sure. I couldn't tell if I was actually being summoned
you,
or not.
You were. He would be a perfectly good fourth liner. And this deal takes up that space. And so that is the issue with this deal. It's not the money. Maybe you make the justification of expansion draft, but you can find anyone. You could sign Kiefer Sherwood to an extension and then he could be that. And if Seattle takes him, great, fine. Devin Shore, RFA this summer, sign him to a 2-year deal. Same type of thing. Devin Shore could fill that role better. And I think this is the other final part that's very frustrating, is that this is a backward step for this organization in terms of the way that they should be thinking. This is a guy that does not help the team on the ice. I do not care what people say about the intangibles, about different things like that. When he is on the ice, the Ducks are a worse team. That is proven when you look at different statistics. If you look at relative stats and you look at different things like that, the Ducks are worse. They're at a 43% Corsi 4 percentage when he's on the ice, 41% goals for. So pure goals. People that like that don't believe shot attempts or quality or anything like that matters. The only thing that matters is goal. Well, he's on the ice for more goals against than he is for. So there's that for you. Also expected goals for percentage. Right at where the goals for percentage is. So it's not as if he's gotten unlucky or in that situation. So why are you giving this guy an extension? It just doesn't make sense to me. If, for instance, this was a Ducks team that was contending and you want to say that they need that grinder on the fourth line, whatever, 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 fine. Fine, go for it, whatever, do that. I'd probably be mad at that time because you could better utilize those minutes for someone that was actually good to get better ice time.
Well, let me ask you this. How does this affect the likelihood that Derek Grant gets re-signed? Or how does this make you feel towards the likelihood of Derek Grant being re-signed?
Doesn't change a thing about it. I still think that Derek Grant probably gets re-signed, and I'm going to be even more frustrated about it because I can guarantee you.
I thought you thought he was going to get traded.
No. The thing is, Because to me,
if they're re-signing, if they're extending Nick DeLaurier early to 2 years, I don't see how Derek Grant doesn't get re-signed.
Yeah.
I know it's not necessarily the same situation because Derek Grant could actually
potentially get
them something back. But at the same time, if they see enough value in DeLaurier to bring him back for 2 years, then Derek Grant blows that out of the water. And he may be getting re-signed then by the Ducks.
Here, I guess, is the big question here. Is this fourth line beneficial for the Ducks? Is having a fourth line of Carter Rowney, Derek Grant, and Nick DeLaurier beneficial for the Ducks? Not only right now, but in the future. And I'd make the argument that no to both.
Yeah. Well, no, they haven't been good this year.
They haven't been good this year, and they take up space.
Right. Although, we don't really know necessarily what they would look like if, for example, instead of a Nick Delorier on that left side, you had, like you said, maybe a Kiefer Sherwood playing out of position, or
Devin Shore
more consistently. Just a guy who's more of a two-way force, more of a playmaking style than just Delorier who's going to go out there to land some hits and drop the gloves. So that's the thing, is I'm not necessarily convinced that that line is terrible, although I'm saying this against a pile of evidence. But I think that if you took Delorier out of the equation, I would just be curious to see, because Rowney and Grant have been very good shorthanded.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've talked about this, but the Ducks are one of the best teams in the league at generating shots for on the penalty kill. And that's where Rowney and Grant primarily play. So clearly they can contribute in some facet of the game. But to your point, we don't have any evidence that Delorier can do that.
Yeah.
So that's the issue, is that you're paying for a guy who doesn't bring tangible value. And that's the problem. Well,
Zenas 8 brings up this name, and so I'm just going to run with it. Who would you rather have on the fourth line right now? Nick Delorier or Andrew Cogliano?
Well, Cogliano, exactly. Of course. What the heck?
No, but the fact that they traded Cogliano for Shore, they could have.
Yeah, and now they're barely using Shore.
And they just signed Nick Delorier. So you had a ready-made option that could have, as he was aging, filled in on that fourth line and kind of provided that energy type role, penalty killing. And instead, mm-hmm. you trade him, you get Devin Shore back, who is not used at all, and then you trade a fourth for Nick Delorier and then extend him.
Well, here's the thing, though. This dives into something that I've been thinking for a while, especially the last couple of years. I think that the Ducks have really good talent evaluation at the amateur level, but I don't think they have very good talent evaluation at the pro level. Because you look at the guys that they bring in and that they lock in, for example, trading Andrew Cogliano for Devin Shore, and then him immediately becoming a fringe member of the team within about a year. Devin Shore, who knows what his long-term outlook is like in Anaheim. Doubling down on Nick Delorier, potentially doubling down on Derek Grant, although maybe there's an argument there. The way that they've handled the blue line, it just seems like they do a poor job of evaluating their guys at the top level.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe that there's more to it than just, hey, we're bad at evaluating and there's other factors. But there just seems to be this thread of decision-making that doesn't seem to really... You know, when's the last time the Ducks really hit a home run in a move at the NHL level? What's the last home run? Because right now, the Brandon Montour trade for a first and Brandon Gooley, my own philosophy is that you shouldn't really judge a trade on the outcome. You should just look at what the variables were at the time. But regardless of that, and looking at it how most people view it, has Brandon Gooley really...
No,
shined at all this year for Anaheim?
I still don't mind that trade, though, because they got a first.
Well, you don't mind it, but what I'm saying is it's not a home run necessarily.
No, it's not. But yeah, it's not a home run, but I don't think there's going to...
They haven't struck gold in a while.
There aren't many home runs because essentially both teams are trying to get values. That's essentially saying you're having a steal of a deal.
Well, no. Okay, but I'm not limiting it to that deal. I'm just saying in general, the Ducks haven't had
The last deal that really kind of worked out, there are two in mind. One was a rental deal. I think getting Patrick Eves with how he performed for the Ducks was a good deal. I think that you could make the issue with the Patrick Eves trade was the extension.
Yeah.
But I think the last really home run was Hagelin for Perron.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going back a while now.
Yeah. That was 2016?
Yeah. That was 4 years ago.
I mean,
now.
There may be one that we're forgetting and someone may bring up something, but.
Well, like look at the hockey deals that they've done. You know, Henrik for Vatanen. I mean, I feel like that they just kind of traded issues with that
yep.
move.
And the issue with that is the re-signing of Henrik. It's and the contract that was given. And that
they immediately doubled down on the move.
And that's kind of the issue with Bob Murray as a whole in my book, honestly, is that it's one step forward, one step back. It's never a constant progression in one direction. It's always, well, we need to go this direction, but we're going to go back this. And there was a long-running joke before I even started writing for the site and doing this podcast, I used to comment on Anaheim Calling a lot, and would get in discussions there just because I liked the people there, enjoyed the discussions. And there was always a running joke on the website of, well, which phase are they in? Are they in the toughness phase or the speed phase? Because it always went back and forth with Bob Murray with which way he was building the team. He was either making trades to make them faster or making trades to make them tougher to play against. And it was never constantly going one direction. It would always be going one way. And then maybe a couple months later, maybe a season later, it would flip back the other. And that's how this feels. It feels like you're taking a step or two forward and then a step or two back. Getting good Branson, that deal, it's actually worked out decently for them.
That has actually worked out. If I was going to say, if there's one move you could say has been somewhat of a home run, it's been Eric Goodbranson.
Yeah, but I still would kind of let's get more time to see how Goodbranson works. But it's just, I feel like this deal is counterintuitive to what they should be doing. And that's my issue, is that if they do indeed end up selling off Derek Grant, that's an awesome, awesome move. Awesome, awesome move. Especially if they can get a decent pick for him. But then you look at this and say, well, they re-signed Nick DeLaurier. So those are going in two opposite directions. And when you're playing tug-of-war like that going each way, you're not going to accomplish anything. You're just going to end up in the middle just staying in a flat line, not progressing in any direction. And that's my issue. And as Zen is 8 early on in the Twitch chat pointed out, he thinks it's time for Bob Murray to go. And I'm pretty close. I'm basically at that point because it's just, there's no direction. It honestly, it feels like a rudderless ship. That is how the Ducks feel to me at this point in time. It feels like they should really be like going into the curve of the youth movement, of going into the new NHL, especially when you factor in that the next superstar potentially could be Trevor Zegras with how he's been performing in college this year. And there's potential for him to be a legit superstar in the NHL. And the thing is, you look at his game, he's not a physical player. He's a modern-day NHLer. He is a skilled guy that creates chances for himself and for other people and doesn't do it with his body. And so you want to model your team around those guys and around your superstar, because that is the person, the best player on the team. That's the one that your team is going to be following. You want to mold your team around that player to best maximize his talent. Well, the signing of DeLaurier is the exact opposite of that.
All right. Well, we got the meltdown, folks. Mm-hmm. We did it. Is there anything else you want to add about this situation?
No. Did you get it out? Yeah. I think, honestly, when you look at it, the deal's fine. It's whatever. It's $1 million. It's more the representation of what, or kind of what it represents with the Ducks franchise, what it represents with Bob Murray. I think my frustration is more so thrown at that than necessarily Nick DeLaurier as a whole. Good on him for getting some job security.
Yeah. I mean, this is a great day for Nick DeLaurier.
I want to make sure that that's out there, is that, like, I have no ill will towards Nick DeLaurier. Good on him for getting his money. But I just don't like the logic of it.
Right. Well, Nick DeLaurier has earned his money. I mean, if there's anyone that earns their keep in the NHL, it's the guys who drop the gloves. True. That is a hard, hard job. And honestly, they're probably, I mean, even though their value to the actual team isn't that high in terms of the outcome of the game, they're probably underpaid for the damage they sustain performing that job. What price can you put on getting punched in the head over and over?
Yeah, maybe that just shouldn't happen anymore. Is my view.
That's a separate debate. True. Yeah, but so, man, my own thought on it is this is not something that is worth getting super upset about. We just have to see what happens next.
True.
Right. As a precursor, it certainly does not bode well for how they may handle the Derek Grant situation, some of the other pending UFAs, as well as potentially moving on from some of the bigger contracts this summer. So it doesn't bode well, but to me, this rebuild, this transition, this retool, reset, whatever buzzword you want to use, it's not being made or broken by this DeLaurier signing. It's just kind of a drop in the a drop in the ocean, basically.
No, it's just more, it's more so kind of makes me nervous about the direction the franchise is going.
And that's fair, but we'll just have to see. Mm-hmm. Let's give it a little time. Because again, that's not the one that we're waiting to see what happens with. The one we're waiting to happen to see with is Derek Grant. If the Ducks, let's say, re-sign Derek Grant to a contract, and it wasn't this terrible contract, how would you feel about it?
I'd be mad. I'd be mad because he has legitimate value.
What could he re-sign for? I'm curious.
Oh, I thought you were about to say, what could they trade him for?
Well, we've talked about that, but I think we haven't thought about enough of what he could re-sign for.
I think, real quick, though, on his trade value, I think he can get you a third right now.
Right, but we've talked about that. But so do you think, I mean, what would his contract look like? 3 years? 3x3?
You would think at least what Carter Rowney has, which is 1.13. Times that. So you would think at least 2 to 3 mil.
Yeah, I think he's going to peak. He's going to get above 2.
I mean,
especially as a 29-year-old UFA.
If you're him, yeah, you're looking at Devin Shore making 2.3. I could see him making 3. I could see what did Brandon Tanev get?
I don't know. Like, how would I know that off the top of my head?
Well, because he was the awful deal that Pittsburgh gave out over summer, and was 6 times 3.5. And Brandon Tanev in the season before had 14 goals and 15 assists in 80 games. And so had a 29-point season.
Yeah, I mean, he could get a significant contract for a fourth line center.
Yeah, because he has 13 goals this year. Someone's going to overpay for a 13-goal fourth line center that kills penalties.
If you're Derek Grant in this situation, how would you approach it? If Anaheim comes to you with an offer before the deadline, let's say, or you know, before that, do you just take it and resign?
That is a tough one because I think that he would have market value.
Well, but consider his career arc. This is the first time he's really stuck anywhere, and he could essentially cement that, right? You know, I think he's kind of become pretty close with the community here. So maybe if the Ducks come to him with a competitive offer before the deadline, because to me, that's kind of what this comes down to, right?
Yeah.
If the Ducks come to him with an offer before the deadline and he turns it down or he's not immediately willing to sign it, they almost have to trade him.
Well, right? This is the situation I'm in is why would you not talk to him and say, hey, we're going to give you a chance to go chase a cup wherever you want to do it, and then we'll re-sign you over summer. If he honestly is that intent on staying in Anaheim because of, like you said, he's stuck here.
Here's what I'm curious about with that approach. How many times does that happen where that's what's discussed before a trade, but then the guy doesn't come back?
Yeah.
That's what I'm curious about.
I think
about.
That a situation like Grant...
Because once the guy is out the door and he gets other offers,
I think that with
then
a,
you just don't
I
know.
I think with a guy like Grant might be the only situation where... Not only, but a situation where it could work because of the fact of, like you said, he's stuck with Anaheim. He's had success with Anaheim.
But if they trade him again, how would they register with him? Do you mean to Pittsburgh?
They didn't trade him to Pittsburgh.
Okay, well, maybe I'm misremembering.
He signed there as a free agent.
Okay.
He signed in Pittsburgh as a free agent, and the Ducks traded for him.
The point being, though, is if they move on from him again, I just wonder how that would register. Because the first time around, they didn't deem him worthy to re-sign, right? True. So that has a certain impact. And then all of a sudden, you ship him out again. At a certain point, this is a matter of almost ego, right? Where if you can withstand the emotional impact of saying, hey, we're going to move on from you, but we'll bring you back, then I think he should probably do that. On the flip side, you could say, well, look, at what point are you just going to show me that you want to keep me?
Well,
right? There's that element.
I mean, this is the real conversation we need to have on this, though. What does Derek Grant do for you?
Okay, well, before we do that, let's jump into our first break. We'll be right back. Okay, back from the first break. So we're having this raging conversation about Derek Grant. We still have a couple of games to talk about. But let's quickly discuss it, though. So before we went into the break, Jake asked, okay, what does Derek Grant actually do for you? And it's hard to say because clearly he's been a good penalty killer for the Ducks this year.
I would agree with that.
He serves a purpose there. And it's not just the numbers. You watch the Ducks when he's killing penalties. He does the things that are important. He wins faceoffs, and he consistently gets chances in the other team's zone. So I don't know necessarily how much you want to pay just for that aspect of the game, but he does bring you some value there. The question is at 5-on-5, if we're going to see a situation where he can actually be on the positive side of the ledger in terms of chances, shot attempts, different things like that, because he hasn't been this year. Now, how much of that is a product of who he plays with? Is this more of a Carter Rowney story? Is this more of a Nick Deslauriers story? I would be curious to see that fourth line with someone else besides Nick Deslauriers and what their numbers would look like, but we're probably not going to get an opportunity to see that.
Yeah.
So that's maybe the downside of the Deslauriers re-signing.
Yeah. My thing is that what's more beneficial to this Ducks team long-term? Having Derek Grant in that fourth line role or having Isaac Lundestrom there? And I think next season having Isaac Lundestrom there is probably more beneficial.
Right, but here's the thing, though, and just to kind of take what I think their position on this would be, Isaac Lindstrom's 20, and
correct.
He probably could use maybe one more season in the AHL or a half season in the AHL, and if they bring him up, I don't think they're going to bring him up to be a fourth-line center. That just historically doesn't seem to be how this franchise handles their younger guys.
Let's kind of run through real quick the center depth of this team. So they've got right now Getzlaf, Henrique, Steele, Grant. They have Isaac Lundestrom down in the minors. They have Trevor Zegras, who may be ready to jump to the NHL next season. So what do you do if Zegras impresses enough where you want him on your NHL roster next season?
Well, so that's, I think, the better question. Because if Trevor Zegras makes the jump next year, someone's out of the equation in this lineup. Mm-hmm. Someone has to be, right? Logically speaking. And so maybe that's another consideration for the Ducks as they approach this deadline is we really like Derek Grant. We like what he brings to our team. But, if we have seen Trevor Zegras now dominate at every level and it would be, we don't want him spending another year in college. So how can we really justify bringing this guy and kind of doubling down on this fourth line center? It's hard to say. On the flip side, I do think that maybe Derek Grant is not the domino to fall. Maybe it's an Adam Henrique who gets moved over the summer.
Potentially.
Right? Because, if you bring in Zegras to the lineup, let's say your centers are Getzlaf, Steele, Henrique, and Zegras, that's an interesting set of centers because where does each guy line up? Because all of a sudden, Sam Steele seems like the fourth best guy in that scenario. And he's been locked in as their third line center this year.
And let me ask, kind of, this is part of the conversation with bringing up Lundestrom, is if they do give Grant term, Lundestrom eventually is going to need to be in an NHL lineup, whether it's next season.
Well, Lundestrom is eventually going to get traded if they
re-sign Grant.
That's kind of what that's the domino effect.
Yep. And so that's kind of the long-term question. Who do you want on this team long-term? Isaac Lundestrom or Derek Grant?
Yeah.
And also keep in mind, Derek Grant is what, 30 right now? Is that right?
29.
Yeah. I believe he is turning 30. He's turning 30 in April. So he's going to be 30 at the start of next season. So if you give him a 3-year deal, you're going to have a guy that's 30 to 33 as compared to a guy that's 21, 22, 23.
I think the most ideal thing that the Ducks would want to do, if they would want to have it both ways, is to re-sign Grant to maybe a 1-year, 1 or 2-year deal, because I think it's not unreasonable to have him there just as a placeholder in case a Lundestrom maybe doesn't take another step or Zegras comes in or Zegras does another year of college. We still don't know what's going to happen there. The most likely scenario to me is that he ends up in the NHL probably next season. if not maybe the end of this year. But we'll just have to see with that. I think the domino to fall in all of this might just not be Derek Grant. It might be Adam Henrique.
Maybe.
Because to me, he's the most logical guy, right, to move.
If they were to remove Adam Henrique in a trade and then re-sign Derek Grant, how do you view that? Do you think that that is at least palatable?
So if they trade Henrique and move Grant, or sorry, trade Henrique and re-sign Grant, I think that makes more sense because you're opening up a spot.
I would agree.
You're opening up the spot that you would ideally want one of the kids to fill, not a fourth line role. So, again, I don't necessarily agree with this notion that you can't possibly put a young player on the fourth line, but that's just the way NHL teams go about it. And so, yeah, I think that that would be the way to go. And we'll just have to see when that happens. Potentially, Henrique is the guy who goes in the expansion draft as well.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So, we'll just have to see. Okay, well...
We will, by the way, so for anyone out there wondering what our plan is for our Patreon, our next episode, I think what we've talked about at least has been given to us on our Patreon Discord. The reason why I bring this up is it's actually going to be a real fun one, is we're going to do a retrospective on the Ducks' different trade deadlines past and kind of give grades to Bob Murray on those trade deadlines. And then I believe that probably what we'll do for the deadline this year is similar to what we did last year, which is on our Patreon episode, we will do a breakdown of the trade deadline as a whole across the NHL, not just the Ducks. And then right afterwards, we'll record a regular episode specifically about the Ducks for the trade deadline. So there will be content coming your way for the trade deadline. It's going to be broken up between the Patreon and the main show, though.
Yeah, I am excited for the trade deadline.
Are you?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I'm always excited. I just don't know what there's going to be.
Oh, there's always trades. There's always this notion that before the trade deadline, nothing's going to happen, and then things end up happening. Regardless, even if it's just a few trades are fun. I like talking about trades.
trade drunk.
Your trade drunkenness has worn off on, or we have worn off on me. Okay, so
real quick, I heard. Trying to figure out where this came from, but I think I was listening to a podcast this week and they mentioned that the Ducks are one of the most active teams within the trade market is what people are hearing.
Yeah, well, so this is actually a tidbit that I guess we can talk about. In 31 Thoughts, again, Josh Manson's name came up, and again, it seems unlikely that he gets traded, but now it sounds like Andrei Kasha is the likelier trade candidate.
It'd be so dumb.
Which is weird because that his name keeps coming up. There hasn't been any actual reporting, but Andrei Kasha's name has been on the TSN trade. Is it the trade bait board that they have
something.
Up? And then Elliot Friedman dropping that out there. People say that, oh, it's just, you know, speculative and Friedman's just spitballing there. But I don't really view it that way. I don't think that someone who's as influential as he is would just put something out there if there wasn't some thing that he had heard, some undercurrent, right? It just doesn't make sense. And also Craig Custance talked about Andrei Kasha's name. And so all this to say that the Ducks have tried to trade Andrei Kasha before.
Mm-hmm.
If Justin Falk would have accepted a contract extension with Anaheim, Andrei Kasha would be a member of the Carolina Hurricanes right now.
Yep.
So they keep trying to trade him. It's not as if this is something that's crazy or way out there. Do you think that they should trade him, though?
Well, it as with everything, it's all about the return.
So you're not just don't trade him at all, essentially. It has to be the right deal.
Correct. I think that if you're looking at people to trade, he's low on my list because of his age, because of the fact that there is some potential, I think, in there still where, yes, per different things, he's in his prime production years right now. But I think that if you were to look at how he's produced shots and everything like that, the goals will come. It's been more a bit of luck more so than anything else as for him not scoring those goals. And so I would be more willing to bet on the goals coming because of the the shot production that he has, the quality. Well,
why
and quality.
Do you think that they keep floating him out there? What is it about about Andre Kasha?
I think
Kasha,
part of it is that the Ducks don't like smaller guys necessarily. I know that might be making it too simple, but I think that Bob Murray may view his injuries as happening because he's smaller. And so they view that if they can get value.
He's listed as 6 feet tall. I don't know if that's true.
There's no way he's actually 6 feet.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing. I don't think it's actually about him being smaller. I mean, I know your tensions are high with the Stelorius re-signing, which is understandable. I just don't think they want to re-sign him. I don't think they want to sign his next contract.
Maybe.
I think that's what it comes down to, because he's going to be an RFA again, which you would think, that's going to help the team. But on the flip side of that, he is arbitration eligible. And with just his injury history and the guys that potentially could come up on the right wing, I just don't think they want to lock themselves into Andre Kasha long term. That's, to me, the most logical explanation of it. And yeah, maybe that's the fact that he's a little smaller. If Andre Kasha was 6'4", would we be having this conversation? Maybe not, because Andre Kasha might have been drafted higher if he was taller. But yeah, I think that's probably what it comes down to, which is a shame, because I think Andre Kasha is legitimately a good player for this team. And even if you re-sign him eventually, I still think he can be a contributor. He's not going to... His price tag is capped out because he doesn't score a ton. And so the current deal he's on is perfect at $2.6 million a year. And I don't really see him getting this massive raise on his next deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think his next contract looks like?
Because
he's going to be 26 by then.
Well, yeah, because so his, for anyone out there, his current contract...
26-year-old RFA.
Yeah, he's making 2.6 right now for this year and next year. And he is an RFA with arbitration rights. So I would say his next deal is probably, well, let me think about this. Where is his scoring currently at? I could see his next deal being in the 3-4 range, depending on how his scoring ends up going in the next couple seasons. Maybe more. It all depends on how his production ends at this year and next year. I think probably $5 million, though.
Wow, five?
I think that's where he could end up.
Jakob Silverberg makes 5.2.
I think that's where he could end up.
Yeah, if his production gets to a consistent range, probably. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's really confusing. Andre Kasha is very good. He makes this team better. Yeah, he is injury prone, but I still think he's a guy you want on your
team.
There
are lots of players that get injured in a physical hockey, in a physical sport like hockey. It happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of, I mean, some of the injuries he's had are just not even his fault.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, so let's move on here. I'm surprised we went that long on this trade talk. We do have a couple games to talk about.
Yep.
So let's just kind of run through them. The Ducks played the Sabres last Sunday, came out to an early lead, 3 goals to start the game. Jakob Silverberg with a nice one. Ryan Getzlaff getting on the board, a nice feed from Rickard Rakell, and then Nick Ritchie getting on the board. Nick Ritchie is actually good, folks. Remember that.
Yep.
And then from there, the Ducks would essentially stop playing. Is that the right way to put it?
That's probably a good way to put it.
Ryan Miller making his return to his hometown. Well, not his hometown, but where he played the majority of his career in Buffalo. And Ryan Miller had himself a game. He essentially carried the Ducks to the win through the next 40 minutes after that first period. Now, one thing to note is that despite the Ducks really just hanging on, especially at the end, the Sabres only mustered 1.89 expected goals. So it's not as if the Sabres were just absolutely pouring it on. The Sabres are just... The Sabres just confuse the hell out of me.
Yeah.
How are they this bad? How are they continually
especially
this bad?
With the season Jack Eichel's having.
They're going to have to do another rebuild. That's where they're
maybe
at.
Maybe.
Anyway.
But
anyway, I don't want to talk about the Sabres because they're depressing. But the point is the Ducks, yeah, they took their foot off the gas, but it wasn't against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And so they were able to withstand.
Yeah, and the big thing in this game is, I don't even know if necessarily took their foot off the gas is even the right way to put it. Their foot was halfway on the gas, maybe, in that first period. A big reason why they were able to take the lead that they did is they were playing against, I believe, Jonas Johansson is a rookie goalie. Is that right?
Yeah, he's been an ECHL goalie the bulk of his career. Yeah,
he was not good. You look at all three of the goals. None of them were exactly a top-notch goal. Maybe the first one. I think the first one, which was a really nice breakout pass by Fowler to find Delzato. Delzato hits Steele with a really nice cross-ice pass. And then Steele, I think this may have been one of Steele's best plays of the season, to be honest, with his rush into the zone and drawing a couple guys to him and then finding Silverberg in the middle of the ice, who's able to pot it. But that was a brilliant play, brilliant shot. The other two goals are ones that Johansson probably has to have. The Richie goal, that happens when you shoot a bunch, as in for Nick Richie, goals are going to come when you shoot a bunch in dangerous spots. That's what we talk about, is those sometimes will find the way. You will get a little bit lucky because you're shooting so much. But that is one where Johansson will want to get down. That's not one that should go in. And then the Getzlaf goal wasn't exactly a good goal either. And so it's the Ducks were able to get a 3-0 lead because they were playing against a non-NHL caliber goalie.
Well, so I don't think that he was bad on those goals because those were good chances from the Ducks. It's just that when you're not, like you said, an NHL caliber goalie, those are shots that you expect an NHL goalie to stop, because NHL goalies are very good. But anything lower than that, and you can't expect those saves. And so,
yep, that's kind of my point, is that he's not an NHL caliber goalie. That's the difference in this game. I think if the Sabres had an NHL caliber goalie, this game's tied or the Sabres win. So the Ducks, yes, they won. Not trying to put a...
what the heck? Are you just saying this win doesn't count? What's wrong with you?
But I'm saying that this wasn't this great performance from the Ducks team. And
well, last game of the road trip, the Buffalo flu.
True.
Right? There's all these different factors going into it. I hate making those excuses, but this team... all of the cliche excuses that you can make in a long season about end of a road trip, different things like that, right? Back to back. They always seem to apply to the Ducks. They always seem to directly affect the Ducks. There are teams, I'm sure, where that doesn't completely nuke how they play. But for the Ducks, for whatever reason, it always affects them. So, and that's what we saw in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on to Tuesday's game.
Before we do that, we should jump into our second break. So we will be right
back.
And we are back. So, yes, Felix, the second game?
Yes. Thank you for our... We just had a 17-minute period.
There we go. Yeah, you know? Sometimes.
Okay. All righty. So the game on Tuesday, it was postponed due to a really unfortunate event. The actual game itself lasted just a few minutes, didn't make it through the first period, got about halfway through the first period, was a tie game. Adam Henrique got on the board, and then the Blues tied it back up. But, I mean, none of that really matters. The story of the night, Jay Bomeister had a loss of consciousness on the Blues bench and had to be taken to the hospital. They had to essentially revive him on the bench. It turns out that he had a cardiac event, and now the latest is that he's had a device set up in his, I guess, in his heart or on his heart to keep his heart rate or make sure that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
This is all a really poor explanation. I haven't done too much research on it, but essentially the most important thing out of all of this is that Jay Bomeister is okay.
Yes.
Now the question becomes, should he ever play hockey again?
No.
We'll see what happens there. I hope not for him.
Yep, agreed.
As he's had a really good career. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's played in a ton of games, but it's not worth it anymore.
And so very scary moment. Really fantastic job by the medical staff on hand from the EMTs, from the emergency medicine doctors that were implemented by the NHL, and every arena has them. The ones at Honda Center are there from, I believe, they're there from the St. Joseph's emergency room. They're the ER doctors from there, and they have to have one there for every single game, and this is the exact reason why. And so they were able to jump into action very, very quickly and be able to essentially revive Jay Bomeister, and thankfully he's alive because of that. So
it's a pacemaker, by the way, the device.
Yes. So hockey really didn't matter with this game. Awesome to see Jay Bomeister. The game was postponed, will be rescheduled. The only note that I did want to add from that is that I believe the way it works with going back to the Rich Peverly situation, which is actually why there are doctors on hand for every single game. And so it's good to see that essentially the NHL was able to learn from a scary situation and make teams more prepared. But the game will restart at the beginning of, it's not going to restart at the same time, but it will restart at the beginning of the first period. I believe the score will be 1-1 though to start. And so the goals that were scored will still be on the board, which makes sense because when you're a player, you scored those goals. You want to have those stats because that matters when you go into contract negotiations.
Well, so here's my question. Do we see these kind of things happen in other sports where a guy passes out on the bench, has a, you know, essentially a heart failure? It feels like I just haven't heard of it happening in other sports. And in hockey, we have multiple instances of it happening. And I'm just curious what it is, if it's something about hockey players, what it is. But it seems like something that you just don't see elsewhere. And I just wonder why that is.
Yeah.
Any thoughts there?
I'm trying to think if I can think of.
I mean, your heart rate gets incredibly high when you play hockey because when you're an NHL player, you're going absolutely all out for 45 seconds at most. And so your heart rate can get to really high levels. But even then, I don't know if that even is correlated with what happened to Jay Bomeister.
I just think it's freak accidents. I don't really think there's any other better explanation than that, to be honest, is that.
That's probably the most likely explanation, but it is just odd that you don't see that elsewhere at all. So good, though, that Jay Bomeister is doing well. Mm-hmm. I hope that whatever decision he makes is going to be the best one for him. So one interesting thing is John Shannon noted that there's nothing in the CBA that would prevent him from returning to play with a pacemaker, which I find kind of interesting. If he decides he wants to come back with a pacemaker, he can absolutely do that. Okay, let's move on to Thursday's game, an absolute shellacking.
It was a good game, right? It was a good one, right?
6-0. Calgary Flames just thrashed the Ducks. Now, this is a weird one. This is a weird one because the Ducks had essentially... They were a different team depending on what zone they were playing in. So defensively, the Ducks were atrocious. You know, over the course of the game, the Flames kind of backed off, and the numbers look better now than they would have if this game had been competitive throughout. But the Ducks had such a horrendous start to the game defensively that they didn't really give themselves any chances of coming back in this one. Offensively, though, the Ducks had a pretty good game. Their expected goal, they had 3.3 expected goals, and just overall, they were buzzing in the offensive zone. Troy Terry had a good game offensively. The power play actually looked good here and there, but it just, all of that was essentially for naught with the way that the defensive side of the game was happening. And after the first period, it was already 4-0, and you would see Ryan Miller come in. What did you think of that, John Gibson getting pulled?
I don't know if
it's not something that Dallas Eakins has gone to.
No, and I think so. If we talk about each goal, I'm not necessarily, each one was horrible in their own way, and I'm not sure if you can necessarily blame Gibson.
I don't think any of them were on him. I mean, especially for example, the goal by Oliver Shillington, where it's a straight on shot, but the Ducks
back to
defense was so bad that they let him walk in.
Yeah.
I might have been able to score there. I'm just kidding. There's no way I could shoot through that traffic. But the point, but he was screened on that shot, though.
Yeah.
And so he couldn't see it.
Well, and the first goal, which was on the power play, for whatever reason, Brendan Gooley went up and followed the man to the point, leaving Manson as the only man in front of the net with two Flames. And then Manson, as Gooley is starting to kind of track back, Manson goes to the corner. And so guy's just left wide open in front of the net by himself, and it's Elias Lindholm who's able to bury, just basically chip away at a rebound with no one on him. And so it was just awful defensive breakdowns on almost every single goal. And so that's the issue, is that we talk about expected goals a lot. We talk about chances, quality, all this different type of stuff. And yes, even though at the end of it all, the Ducks probably had the better of the chances, But when you do 5-on-5 flurry score venue adjust per money puck, the Flames come out on top at 2.29 to 1.86. So essentially, when down the goals that they were, the Ducks should have been producing more chances than the Flames. But here's the issue is that the Flames got so many golden opportunities in that first period that they were able to capitalize on them. And that's going to happen when you give up those types of chances and have those types of breakdowns. So I don't think this game was a 6-0 horrible performance like the final score shows. But this game also isn't as good as it might be if you purely looked at the metrics on the night, with the Ducks having 3.34 expected goals for in all situation, 2.4 against. I think the only positive takeaway from this game is Troy Terry. Honestly, the game that he had, and the game that he also had, I think, against the Sabres was pretty good. But against the Flames, I mean, he put up at 5-on-5. He had 6 shot attempts, 6 scoring chances for. He had 5 shots on goal, 2 high danger chances, 0.42 individual expected goals. When you go to all situations, he had 9 shots on goal in all situations, 13 yeah. shot attempts. So for a guy that we said should probably shoot the puck more, he shot the puck a lot in this game.
Yeah, he played really well. Now, one thing that was an interesting change going into this game was the pairings for the Ducks. So the defensive pairings were just totally shuffled. You would see Lindholm with Larson, Gouley with Manson, and Fowler with Delzato. And I find this kind of interesting because the Ducks essentially want one of their veteran NHL caliber, let's call it, defensemen on each pairing. And the final numbers don't look too bad. But here's the thing. I thought that they looked really disjointed early on when the game was in the balance. Yeah.
We didn't mention, actually, though, against the Sabres, Eric Branson went out injured. So he did not start either of the two games against the Blues or against the Flames.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
So overall, just laid an egg. I don't really think there's any other way to put it, regardless of looking at the metrics. Poor performance by the Ducks. So Time brings up a good point and basically said, like, when you look at the metrics, they might end up equal, but it may be 3 one-on-ones versus the goalie versus 10 regular quality chances against the other one, and they may end up equal, but makes sense why there's 3 goals against when you give up 3 one-on-ones.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that when the game was in the balance, the Ducks were terrible.
Yep.
And then they had to climb themselves out of that the rest of the way through. But yeah, I mean, to kind of circle back to Troy Terry, I thought that he just looked so confident with the puck. You know, bringing it down the wing, he was making moves, getting shots off. He looked really good on the power play, the early power play that the Ducks had in that right circle on the right side. He looked so dangerous. He was using that shooting option to create the middle passing lane. He just looked like the Troy Terry that we saw in San Diego last year. Extremely confident.
Was that meant to be a shot?
Was that meant to be a shot at me? It's crazy that all this happened on the right side.
Was that meant to be a shot? You know,
on the right side.
You know, I still would like to see him on the left side. So great performance. I mean, I've been telling everybody about Terry for a good year and a half now. So you know. I expected this.
Yeah.
Expected
well, the thing this. Is that you just say it all the time, and you're right. Maybe 30% of the time, but
30% of the time, I'm right every time.
He rewarded your confidence for sure in this one, and it's good to see, because the Flames are not necessarily a great team, but they are fighting for their playoff lives, so they're not just playing some bottom feeder. And he looked good. He did all of the things that you conceivably want him to be doing in a larger role once this team is further down the line in its retool process.
Mm-hmm. I think we're about to get into some questions, so if people want to throw questions into the Twitch chat, we'll start getting to those. But yes, so for those of you watching this on YouTube, yes, we put it on YouTube. You can find us by searching for the AC Pod there. If you want to like, subscribe to the channel, you'll get notified. It is the recorded version of the Twitch stream. We also obviously have our typical recorded version, but the real fun thing is our Twitch stream. You can find us at twitch.tv/acpod, where you can help support the show in a way that's completely free to you. If you have Amazon Prime, you get one free Twitch Prime sub each and every month. You do have to hit that subscribe button after 30 days. That subscribe button should be above Felix's head. Felix, point up. There you go, up there. It helps out the show more than you can imagine. You get special emotes in the chat, special badges next to your name, and on somewhat busier nights, we will prioritize your questions. So I actually did want to ask you about this because this is not Ducks related, but it's a talking point in the NHL. What do you think of Zach Cassian?
Yeah, Zach Cassian is not very smart. So that's kind of, well, let's start with that. But basically, for those who didn't see, Zach Cassian got suspended 7 games for kicking Eric Chernak with the blade of his stick, or the blade of his skate. And it wasn't a hard kick, but you can't kick a guy with your skate blade. That's incredibly dangerous. And Zach Cassian has been suspended multiple times in the past. He's been suspended this season. And he got 7 games, which feels incredibly light given A, his past history, and B, the severity of the offense. Yep. So, yeah, NHL Department of Public Safety, next CBA, this needs to be totally reworked because they're not getting it right.
The thing with this is I'm usually the person that tries to understand where the number of games comes from and almost in a way tries to defend
another, it. Another thing that you pointed out is, and I think that makes sense, is that everything they say in their video explanation for this event makes sense. Everything they say is like, yes, that is absolutely correct. And then the 7 games, it just doesn't align at all.
Well, and also when you factor in that, so there are a couple incidents in the past of players using the blade of their skate in a dangerous manner. The one that comes to mind right away is Chris Pronger on Ryan Kessler when Pronger was a Duck and he stomped on his leg. Now, granted, more force, more dangerous, different things like that. I don't think Chris Pronger had been suspended recently at that point in time, but he had been in the past. Pronger got 8 games back then, and that would have been in 2008. We're 12 years later when suspension should be stiffer for stuff like this. And the fact that he had just gotten suspended a month ago for sucker punching a guy, there's no other way around that. And the fact that now he's kicked a guy with the blade of his skate, this should have been at least 15 games, at least.
Or at least 10, I would say. At least get to double digits.
For me, at least 15. And I don't know if they're maybe afraid of an appeal. At 8 games, or at 7 games, he can still appeal. I believe over 6 he can appeal. But I don't know if maybe they were afraid after all the stuff with, what was it, Dennis Weidman, about it getting appealed and all of that stuff and how long it took. And so the player safety was nervous about that. But you can't. A guy can't kick someone with a skate blade. You can't.
Especially when you consider that NHL players get their skates sharpened daily. Yeah. And sometimes between periods. So that is a sharp blade.
If maybe this was first offense, if maybe this was...
here's what I think it is. I think that they view Zach Cassian as an isolated problem in the league. And so if this was someone else, I think they would have come down harder, which logically doesn't make sense because of past
history.
Should be
the opposite.
Considerations. But I think they see Zach Cassian as just, he's his own problem. And so coming down hard on him doesn't have this sweeping effect because he's just so dumb out there that you don't see anyone else doing that. That's what I think it is, honestly. I'm not saying it's right.
So here's what Evander Kane just tweeted out because he actually just got suspended. And I'll read it.
Yeah,
on
3 games.
I'll read this on the air. He just tweeted this. The fact that the NHL Department of Player Safety headed by George Parros continues to pick and choose who and what they suspend is ridiculous. There have been countless incidents of the same nature through this season and past seasons that have gone unsuspended or fined. No one person can tell you what is or isn't a suspension in today's game. It's become a complete guess. There is a major lack of consistency with NHL Department of Player Safety, a completely flawed system in so many ways, from the suspensions to appeal rights. It's baffling to me how we as players agreed to this. You can't continue to give some players a pass and throw the book at others. There has to be an outside third party making these decisions to remove the bias that transpires in this department headed by George Parros. None of it makes sense. So I actually haven't seen the Evander Kane hit.
No, and also Evander Kane has his own checkered history.
But
so.
the fact that Zdeno Chara crossed...
But his offenses are so much lower on the totem pole than Zach Kessler. And then look at Zdeno Chara getting a fine for cross-checking Brendan Gallagher in the throat.
Yeah.
That is a complete joke.
Going back to Zach Kassian, should it matter that it wasn't forceful? Should it matter that Cernak wasn't hurt? Should any of that matter?
That's the problem is that the NHL, and at least they're explicit about this, they judge it partly based on the result, which to me is dumb.
It is.
Because it's totally
dumb. Well, it is. I think that there is some justification there with head hits or things like that.
Sure, there's some. Yeah, like it's not completely wrong, but... It should be a much lower percentage of the decision-making process.
Well, and it should be dependent upon the situation, what it is. That should not come into play at all when you're kicking someone. When the fact that if it's a foot or two higher, you could literally kill someone. Like, this is not a situation of just potentially injuring or different things like
that.
And
also, my favorite thing about it was just how Zach Kassian's argument was just so...
He was holding me down when he was actually holding
him. Just so nakedly wrong. And I love how player safety even pointed that out in their video. It's saying that, he was trying to kick out to get free. And it's like, well, even if you were trying to get loose, you still didn't have to kick him in the chest. Like, nothing would justify that. So he's just dumb. I don't know what else to say. He just doesn't seem to be a very smart
person
to me.
And they should have thrown the book at him for this.
And I don't want to bring up like his past either, but his decision making over his lifetime is not great. And it just seems to carry out onto the ice. I don't really feel bad for those people. Well, you know, there's this thing about you want to help rehabilitate people. You want to help people eventually get a second chance, right? Things like that. And I think for the most part, Zach Kassian has done that. But when that string of behavior continues, you can't really feel sorry for anyone anymore. And that's just how I see him today,
honestly. He should have the book thrown at him. He should have had the book thrown at him. For me, personally, the fact that he did this right after the whole Matthew Tkachuk thing, the fact that that just happened, that was like a month ago.
Yeah.
Not even a month ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. And he got suspended for it. Like, it almost is as if the Department of Player Safety knew that they had to suspend him for that, but then they didn't factor that in with this suspension at all. Like, if this was a random person doing this that had no history, 7 games, all right, fine. Maybe you could make the justification about it.
Right.
But the fact that it's Kassian, the fact that his history, the fact that everything, this should have been 15 games. So that was a little bit of a sidetrack there.
I see no lies here.
All right. Lewis asks us, what are your thoughts on the XFL reboot?
I don't care.
You're not going to watch a game?
Sorry.
Probably LA Wildcats? Not. Is that the team?
Yeah, it is.
You know their name.
It's actually pretty insane because Pro Football Focus, PFF, they have full-on fantasy advice for...
There's daily fantasy XFL.
Yeah. There's a raging fantasy component to the XFL, which is crazy, but I can't bring myself to care about it. Sorry. Don't
time
care.
Asked in a way or what's your opinion on fighting in hockey?
Ooh, wow.
Time's just coming at okay. it. He worded it differently, but okay. I'm going to leave it at that.
I think it's past. It's time has passed. I think that there was a time where fighting without the knowledge that we have now about the long-term ramifications health-wise, I think there was just no way to know for sure. You know, guys in the 50s bashing each other. I mean, if you look at 50s hockey, it was insanely brutal. Guys would hit each other in the head with sticks. So back then it was just totally different. Wild West, Dark Ages, whatever you want to call it. But now, today, with the science that we have, with seeing how certain guys end up after their careers sometimes dead because of this, it's hard for me to watch those fights now and enjoy them in a pure state because I know, this is like, it's different with sports like boxing and MMA because those guys kind of sign up for it, right? You know more what you're getting into. But with hockey, I just feel like the fighting is so, it's so separate from the actual sport itself that it's just hard for me to really kind of be all about it like I used to be, right? Just with everything that we know. Yeah. So I, you know, from the actual concept of, hey, where does fighting fit in the game? I have no problem with guys fighting because it's an aggressive, emotional sport. And, you know, whatever, fighting is a part of that. But I just don't think it should be a part of it anymore because of what we know and how it affects guys. It just doesn't make sense anymore.
Honestly, the moment for me, I always had kind of viewed it in this light where the stage fights, I was just kind of over with.
Well, the stage fights are absolutely brutal. The fun ones are the heat of the moment, two rival teams just duking it out. That's fun. Everyone thinks of like a Jerome Iginla, or for a Ducks example, Ryan Getzlaff fighting with Joe Thornton, you know, things like that. Those are memorable moments, and they're very entertaining. And for those guys who never really fight, you know, who knows if that's really going to impact them long term. But it's the guys who can, like a Nick DeLoria, for example, who consistently do it. They're putting their long term health on the line.
And honestly, the moment that I kind of turned on this, because I was in that mode where I was fine with in the heat of the moment fights because, like you said, they're fun. They're all this type, different type of stuff. But it was honestly during last season's playoffs, because there was that heat of the moment fight between Svechnikov and Ovechkin. And regardless of whether or not he should have been fighting Ovechkin, whether or not Ovechkin should have said yes or no, that's not part of the conversation to me. I don't really care about that, to be honest, because the fight happened. How it happened doesn't matter. The pure shame of the moment is we weren't able to watch Andrei Svechnikov in the playoffs for a couple games because of that. And he wasn't 100% healthy because of that fight. So was that worth it? Was this heat of the moment fight between them worth not us as fans?
To be fair, playoff fights are extremely rare.
I know, but us as fans who are watching the game for an entertainment purpose, and there are fans out there who say that the fighting is part of the entertainment. Well, what's more entertaining, watching those two guys fight for that minute or being able to watch Svechnikov for multiple games? What's more entertaining? For me, as a fan of hockey, it's watching Svechnikov for multiple games. That was the moment that I turned, that I realized, wait, this is dumb. Why do I care about this fight when I'm losing the ability to watch this player? Now, that is an extreme, and I understand that, because fights don't always happen with guys, or guys don't always get hurt in fight. But why even allow that extreme to happen?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I enjoy fights as a fan because they're fun, they're entertaining. But at the end of the day, they don't really. I think that they're, like I said, like my initial statement was, I just think they're time.
I'm curious for your thoughts on this. Brandon Pineda 244 brings this up. I think it's interesting. I don't fully buy it, but it's interesting. I think fighting would disappear pretty quickly if the refs were better about calling dangerous plays. There aren't many missed dirty plays in football because of the number of refs. But even obvious stuff like boarding gets missed all the time in hockey. If that keeps happening, fighting will happen all the time.
That's actually not where fights happen. Fights happen after clean plays,
and not only that,
all the time.
Fights will happen also after a penalty is called. The refs may have called a penalty on a play, and the teammates still want to get a fight in. There may be a 5-minute major coming, and a player wants to get a licking on the guy.
Well, the thing is, I just, fighting, whatever we think of fighting, it doesn't matter in a way, because fighting is going to be phased out of the game within the next 10 years.
Neatrude does bring up that he highly recommends anyone with an opinion on fighting watch Ice Guardians. I've watched it. I don't know if you have. It is interesting to see that perspective from the an enforcer's side of it, but I've seen that movie. It's great. Doesn't change my opinion on this, though. I think the game has passed it in a way.
Yeah, and if you look at fighting at the junior levels, there's been a huge crackdown on fighting in junior. And so to me, that you're going to have kids coming up. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to fight once they're allowed to, but I just think that the culture of fighting is going to be pretty significantly caved in at the grassroots level. And by the time guys are going to get to the NHL, it's going to phase itself out.
Probably.
And I think that it makes sense for the junior leagues to do it. And I think that the NHL is going to get to that point as well. Now, I don't see the NHL, though, ever actually banning fighting. I don't think there's ever going to be a day where fighting is just not allowed.
Do you think they could do something like junior hockey does, which after a certain amount of fights, you're suspended for a game?
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe. But the thing is with the NHL, there's two components to this. The first component is I think that they want to have fights. It's entertaining. They know that there are people who watch hockey because they love to watch fighting. Which I think that sliver of fans is getting smaller.
I think a counter to that is they've taken them out of all highlight packages.
Right. But the second component of this is I also think that in a way banning fighting is almost like an admission. It's almost like they're conceding something with this whole lawsuit about head trauma, right? And so them banning it is almost like admitting that their game is dangerous in that way. And I don't think that they would do that either. So I don't really see it happening. But again, like I said, I don't think we're going to need to get to that point because it's going to phase itself out of the game. So, but I have like I said, though, I don't want this to seem like I hate fighting or I don't think much of fighters. Like I talked about with Nick Deloriate, the guys who fill that role are insanely tough.
Agreed.
Insanely tough. It is such a difficult job. And there's been so many accounts of guys who are extremely nervous going to the games and have to find ways to deal with anxiety knowing that they're going to have to fight. It's a hard, hard job. I mean, you're bare-knuckle brawling. You know, bare-knuckle brawling is actually less damaging than, I believe, boxing. Because the gloves are heavier, so it's actually a greater impact on your brain or your skull. But the bare knuckle just can carve you up. And, you know, guys aren't really throwing straight shots like they used to. It's a lot of just, you know, we're going to grab onto each other and kind of lunge out every now and again. But it's still incredibly dangerous, and I just have a lot of respect for the guys who do
Agreed.
It.
I do agree there.
Because why would you want to who chooses that path, right? Who would want that path? Tip my cap. All right, we got anything else?
I think that is going to do it, unless you want to... Nietzsche asked this, so is hitting going to get phased out then? He's playing devil's advocate. I think the difference between a fight and a hit is that a hit at least has some purpose within a hockey game. A hit is meant to separate a player from the puck.
A hit is a hockey play. A hit is you can step like you just said. It's a body check. You're allowed to put your shoulder into a guy to separate him from the puck. That is a totally legal play. It's always been a part of hockey. Now, what's being phased out is the dirty shots that guys will come in from behind, launch a guy into the boards. That stuff, the headshots, right? The Paul Kariya moments. Those are essentially gone from the game. You don't really see that anymore. But a big body check is still perfectly fine as long as it's legal. Hockey is a physical game. Even when body checking is not allowed, hockey is still pretty physical. So, yeah, I don't see that ever going away, and I don't think that removing fighting would affect that.
Yep.
And any other Ducks topics? I feel like we've kind of gone a little off script here.
It's been a weird week, so we went pretty hard on Nick Deloriate in the beginning. So.
Well, like I said, I know that you're not happy about it, but I'm thankful that that news came out. It gave us something to talk about.
Great. We
you're the bad
we,
guy.
We did get a new review, so I did want to read it. Yes. It came right after we finished recording, I believe, last week. So,
yeah.
5 stars, top-notch Ducks podcast from Raquel's Goatee. Said, I'm a huge Ducks fan, and I love consuming as much media about them as possible. Came across this podcast at the start of the season, and I am hooked. Their podcast helped me relive the games in my mind the day after watching games. Their analysis and takes are really great. My only issues are Jake's opinions on Grant and Silverberg. He wants to keep both of them forever.
Hater.
And the absolute travesty that Felix has not eaten apple pie. The live streams they put on are a great way to get involved and get topics talked about. I'm now a subscriber on Twitch and a patron for bonus episodes, and I'm excited for the future of this podcast. All the best from San Luis Obispo.
Thank you. Wow. That was a Hall of Fame level review. Hall of Fame worthy.
So thank you so much.
He's not wrong, though. You do hate Grant and Silver.
I don't hate them. But thank you so much. That is honestly the exact type of review that we're going for when we put together this type of thing and put together the live stream, put together the Patreon and everything along those lines. And As we've talked about, content for the rest of this season is kind of going to be not all over the place, but
it's going to be limited because we have an actual limit of how much we can post.
We're shooting for 2 a week, but sometimes it will be once a week where you'll at least get it once a week from us, though. There's also some things outside of the podcast that both Felix and I have to focus on a little bit. So that's going to take up some time there.
Right. Yeah. But if you want to chime in as well and leave a review, just search Anaheim Calling or search Anaheim Ducks on Apple Podcasts. And it just takes a couple minutes, but the kind words mean a lot to us just on an emotional level. And because this is pretty much a labor of love for the most part. But it also goes a long way to actually support the show. The way that the algorithm is set up on Apple Podcasts, those reviews go a long way. So please take the couple minutes if you'd be so kind. Couple different ways, though, that you can support the show. Additionally, like we alluded to, we do have a Patreon page where you can contribute to us at two levels. So the first level, it's a dollar contribution a month. It's really a minimal investment, but it shows us, hey, you know, it's like a pat on the back, but you still get a benefit from it. We actually set you up with a Discord chat where during games, and now as we've gone on, essentially games that are at home or within the Pacific time zone or maybe Central, we will have a live chat where we're just going to be going back and forth, talking stats, talking what's going on in the game, Jake complaining about the commentators. So it's a lot of fun. And
just you.
But yeah, so those are a lot of fun. And for a dollar a month, I think that if you're a diehard fan and you don't necessarily have a lot of people in your circle who follow hockey as closely, this is a great way to kind of find a little community. We're almost building a little community in that chat. And so it's a lot of fun. And like I said, we do that after, you know, during games that are on the West Coast. So the ones that are at 4 p.m. East Coast trips or the earlier games, those are going to be a little tougher to actually do. And then we have another tier. So for $5 a month, you still get access to that live chat. But in addition to that, we offer you two bonus episodes a month. So especially in these times where we are navigating some new waters and trying to hopefully find a new home, our regular content is a little lower. So if you want more, this is a great way to do that. We post two bonus episodes a month. We go off kind of into different directions. We definitely have pods where we go in depth on the Ducks. Like Jake talked about, we are actually going to be doing a retrospective pod about past trade deadlines. But then we also talk about league-wide topics. Sometimes we go all the way off script and talk about movies. Star Wars was a recent one, so we might just have to keep that going. Have you seen 1917?
I have.
Okay, I need to go see it, and then maybe we can talk
go
about that.
Go see Jojo Rabbit, and then we can talk about that. I'd much rather do that. Or Knives Out. Or
wow.
Knives Out.
Wow, you basically just insulted World War I
Jojo
veterans.
Rabbit is my favorite movie of the past year. Knives Out, second favorite. So, there you go.
Yeah, I need to go see Jojo Rabbit because I've heard a lot of good things about it.
It's available on Apple on streaming services to buy, not for free.
Yeah, so it's a lot of those pods are a lot of fun. If you enjoy the banter of the show, well, you get a lot of it on that. Let's be honest here. Couple other ways that you can support us though. So if you're not on Apple Podcasts and you don't want to do the Patreon content, well, you can still check us out on YouTube, like Jake mentioned, and we are also on Spotify and on Stitcher. Make sure to check out AnaheimCalling.com. That's our home base. That's at Anaheim Calling on Twitter. Jake is on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. A very diverse feed, I got to say.
I've been diversifying it up ever since. When you started making fun of the wrestling tweets is when they started really going all out.
Yeah, you actually tripled down after I called you out. But to your credit, you've diversified your portfolio.
Yep.
You know, you've added some more soccer, which, you know, everyone wants.
Can I give a review? Lewis asked me how NXT was. So for those of you that don't know, I went to NXT's live event in Riverside last week. It was a birthday present for my wonderful wife. Went with a couple of my friends and their girlfriend / wife. It was so much fun. The matches were so good. I got to see the Broserweights I got to see the main event was amazing. It was DIY and Keith Lee and Velveteen Dream versus the Undisputed Era. I got to yell Adam Cole, baby. Got to yell, sing Oh, Bask in His Glory. It was a great, great time. Anyone out there who's in Southern California that enjoys wrestling, go check out NXT Live in Riverside next time you can. It's such a cool event in such a small venue. And so much fun. Real quick, also on a different topic, I wanted to make mention, Hardcore Luchador said in our Twitch chat, and I thought this was really nice, said that we're not almost building something here. We are building a community with this podcast.
Yeah.
And Zenas8 said he would say that we have built a community, not just are building one. So thank you so much to both of
thank you,
for the kind
Thanks.
Words.
Appreciate you. But yeah, so check out Jake on Twitter. That's where this all started, this tangent. At RandierGames91. Remind him of Tottenham's current season.
Hey, we have a chance for Champions League now that Man City has been banned for 2 years.
That is insane. Talk about a stiff penalty.
Patreon. Save it for Patreon. We can talk about there.
Yeah. Okay. I am on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. I have an article up right now at thefourthperiod.com about the Kasha, Steele, and Jones line and how they've been very good. Timing is kind of tough because now Kasha is sick, but that line has been extremely good for Anaheim. It's actually kind of startling. So if you want some more insight on that, I would say go check out that article.
Really good article. Go check it out. Really great work, Felix.
There you go. Jake's stamp of approval. That's all you need right there. Thanks, Jake. Also, if you're listening now, I don't even know if it'll be up by then, but I'll probably have it up on my feed, but I will be appearing on TSN 1040 this afternoon, the Vancouver station, since the Ducks play the Canucks tomorrow. So I think that there's a recorded version of that I'll put up on my feed after as well. So anyway, with all that being said, thanks everyone for listening to our pod. Thank you for your continued support as we figure out what the next era of the pod is going to look like. You know, we're essentially in a retool right now. We're in a retool.
Ducks?
No, because I think we have a pretty clear idea what we're doing.
Wow.
Wow. We're not tanking by any means, but you know, we're taking some lumps here to come back better. So thanks everyone for listening, and we will catch you at the next pod. Have a good day.
All right, have a good one. Bye.